Hey, it's NPR's Book of the Day. I'm Andrew Limbong. It's kind of wild how little we know about the beginnings of the COVID-19 outbreak. But Dahlia Young's new book is hoping to fill in some of the blanks. It's titled Wuhan, How the COVID-19 Outbreak in China Spiraled Out of Control. And in this interview with Here and Now Scott Tong, Young points out that there were some critical early weeks into the COVID outbreak where the system was going pretty well. You know, everything was working until it wasn't anymore. Because, in part, Young says, the leadership wanted certain things to look good. Hear more about what happened after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
4 years ago this month, you remember when the world stopped.
We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic. Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly.
We know, of course, that the first cases of pneumonia of unknown origin came from the Chinese city of Wuhan. A new book on those early critical days and weeks lays out what the author calls profoundly disturbing actions and delays on the part of some Chinese officials. The title of the book is Wuhan, How the COVID-19 Outbreak in China Spiraled Out of Control. And the author is Dahlia Young, political scientist at the University of Chicago. Dahlia Young, very good to speak to you.
Oh, the same here.
So first, a big picture question about the failures you write about. And you're right, it's not all failures. But, you know, after 9/11, we remember the intelligence community in this country said the biggest failure was a failure of imagination. And you call what happened in Wuhan a failure of epidemiological imagination. What do you mean?
Well, the fact of the matter was there were quite a number of cases initially that had no connection to the Huanan seafood market. And the Chinese epidemiologists and health leaders actually had access to those cases. And yet, they somehow just didn't realize for a number of weeks that the virus had spread. And they kept on referring to the Huanan seafood market and simply ignored those cases that had no exposure to the market.
And you write a lot about this market and how it kept being cited as the reason for these initial cases. What was the upshot of that? Was it that the suggestion was, oh, this is contained, this is virus that comes from animal to human rather than human to human transmission?
Part of the assumption by the leading experts at that time is if the virus directly came from some animal source in the market, then the initial transmissions would likely be very limited, even if there were some human-to-human transmissions. And of course, there clearly were at that point. But at the same time, they took very drastic actions, including bringing the patients to the hospital and so on.
Let's get into the critical few weeks of December 2019, when the system, as you describe it, seemed to be working well. We have the first officially recorded case of this unknown pneumonia, and before the higher-level government officials get involved, what did the clinicians see in their patients, and how did they talk about it?
Well, they clearly realized that the patients had SARS-like symptoms. They were not responding to usual treatment, including antibiotics and so on. So that's what propelled them to order, for example, diagnostic test, and they actually got genomic sequencing results that showed a novel coronavirus. They saw the danger. They put their staff under orders to wear masks and to also don protective suits. But at the same time, multiple doctors reported cases to the health authorities in Wuhan. So it's not a single doctor. There were multiple hospitals, multiple doctors, and there were multiple genomic sequences that became available by the end of December 2019 as well.
So as you write, these seem to be positive signs, at least of the experts talking to one another about what's happening, showing signs of concern, sequencing the virus gene. And then the messaging starts to change. And again, this goes back to the sole focus on the market, that this is limited transmission from animals. Why did that happen? Was there political pressure to look at it that way?
Well, there was certainly political pressure. It was New Year's time. The Chinese Lunar New Year was looming ahead, and the leadership all wanted things to look good. But at the same time, the experts, the health authorities, did take actions under the action program. Part of the development was actually they defined the case as being including exposure to the Huanan seafood market. And they shut down the market, and there were no new exposures, clearly. The problem, however, is that the virus was already circulating outside of the market.
You know, I just want to pause and ask about the data. Again, this to go back to 9/11, we remember this angst that many analysts had that we had some information, we had the warning signs, we just failed to connect the dots. But it seems in China, as you write, officials stopped collecting the dots, stopped collecting the data. Certain cases stopped being reported as relevant cases.
Indeed. In fact, multiple hospitals continue to see new patients with the same symptoms. At least one hospital even actually did their own sequencing results, realized that the virus was spreading among the populations. They tried to report those cases, and the local authorities in particular removed some of the cases from the reporting system.
And I know this is an obvious question, but help us understand the inclination in some cases to not share news or shameful information.
There are multiple incentives. Of course, local authorities don't want their city to look bad, and they may lose some honors, for example, the National Healthy City status. Hospitals did not want others to know that they had doctors, medical staff infected, because they may be penalized for that. So those metrics actually had a major impact on the behavior of the leaders of these hospitals, of the local officials, and so on.
Eventually, we know that in January, the central government chooses to shut down the city of Wuhan, to lock it down. We, of course, are in the age of social media in the U.S. and in China. So before the actual lockdown of Wuhan happens, word gets out. People actually get to leave the city before they close the gates, as it were?
Yes, indeed. And in fact, because the city itself actually was very reluctant to lock down. So they announced the lockdown at 3 a.m. in the morning, but actually the timing for the lockdown was about 10 a.m. So during that time span, a lot of people left, about 500,000 people.
And then presumably a number of them bringing the virus with them to the rest of China.
Indeed. And of course, in the weeks preceding that already, there were cases that had already been identified in Beijing, in Shanghai, in Zhejiang, and so on.
And it was already out. And then by then it was coming clear that this is human to human transmission. And, you know, we know how the story goes in China and, of course, in the rest of the world. So it was some people who were willing to sound the alarm, but in the end, why do you think their warnings were not heeded?
Yeah, this is where I emphasize how there are just powerful forces within the Chinese system, what is known as fragmented authoritarianism, whereby local authorities, for example, have a lot of power to control information. And of course, they had cooperation from the central authorities as well in this case. And as a result, actually, the channels of information, especially for epidemic information, got blocked for about 2 weeks in January when they were most needed.
Yeah. And that brings us to the title of your last chapter. Was the COVID-19 pandemic inevitable? What's your answer?
Well, China had the capabilities. It had talented scientists. It had a lot of actually sequencing and other lab capabilities. It had a population that had learned the lessons of SARS and were willing to cooperate. So in other words, China was more likely to have been able to deal with an outbreak and contain it if people were told the truth, essentially.
Told the truth. Finally, I want to ask you, Professor Yang, what do you take away from what happened, where the successes and where the failures were?
Well, certainly China had, for example, the disease reporting system and so on, but they were not used at all for the initial alerts. So therefore, it's extraordinarily important to make sure to empower clinicians, hospitals to report the information. And for the same reason, because there is discussion of a pandemic accord globally, But you cannot just rely on national governments when internally they cannot get things actually moving. And in the Chinese case in particular, central-local relations matter a lot. So it's incredibly important for countries such as China to work out internal mechanisms to facilitate the communication of risk. For example, just to mention, at the end of December 2019, that this was a SARS-like coronavirus and let the people know would have made a lot of difference.
We've been talking to Dali Yang, political scientist at the University of Chicago. His book is Wuhan, How the COVID-19 Outbreak in China Spiraled Out of Control. Dali Yang, very good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast.